This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Is this SAVE Act? Is it going to pass? Do we have a chance? Senator Eric Schmidt is here. Apparently, we're getting ready to take over another country. Francis Martel is here. We have to discuss a foundational principle of the communists. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Have you complained lately, at any point in recent years, about the quality of things out there? Has it hit you that your phone, maybe not your phone, but your phone breaks? It always breaks. My old phone didn't break. Maybe it was a pen. See, I have this big pen here. My old pens used to last for 6 months. This one lasts for a week. Maybe you've complained about the state of entertainment. And there's always this thing we human beings do, I do it too, where you look back on things in the past kind of with rose-colored glasses. That's human nature. But it does feel like movies used to be better, right? Like TV shows used to be better. It feels like entertainment used to have better stories, things you could relate to, better acting, better. It felt more relatable, inspirational, whatever word you want to put on it. Entertainment used to feel better. Everything, the quality of customer service, everything in our society, it felt better before. And maybe you've had a very difficult time trying to explain why, because it can be difficult. It just feels worse. Everything feels worse. What is the deal? Well, I'm going to point something out to you. And it's going to have to do with entertainment. Not that this is a super high topic on the show, but it shows you exactly what we've discussed many times before. One of the reasons it feels like everything around you is slowly dying. Everything around you is getting worse. The pens, the movies, the customer service. One of the main reasons is diversity. Diversity kills everything. When I say diversity, I mean of any kind. If you are ever making diversity a priority at all, what you are doing is you're making a choice between diversity and merit. That's always that way. Whatever you're trying to diversify, it doesn't matter what it is. The analogy has been used 1,000 times before. If you look at your NBA team, your professional basketball team, and you say, we've got to have 2 or 3 Asian dudes on there, your NBA team is going to be worse because your team is going to be shorter and not as good as basketball. It's just the way it works. Well, it works the same way in customer service. It works the same way when you're making pens. It works the same way when you're making movies. If you choose to diversify it on purpose, you will kill it over time. You will rot it. You will destroy it. You will kill it. Why are all the movies crap now? Well, this is amazing. We actually have evidence of it. We just had the Oscars, the big movie awards they have, the Academy Awards, the Oscars. Well, in order to win an Oscar, you have to meet a DEI quota. And let me read this here. A lead actor, and one of your lead actors has to be a minority. At least 30% of all actors need to be from at least 2 minority groups. The main storyline has to be centered on minorities. So maybe you're wondering why that new movie about Navy SEALs you tuned into has to have a lesbian in there. And of course, the commander is a tranny. But maybe you're wondering why the movie about ancient Vikings has black people in it when there weren't any black people there. Maybe you're wondering, why are they doing this? Well, if you're a writer, a producer, a director, an actor, the Oscars are your Super Bowl. Everyone wants to win one. You got to have one of those on the mantle. And if you want to win one, well, the instructions are clear. Diversity. Why do the movies seem worse now? Because they have taken away merit and replaced it with something else. Now, that would be run-of-the-mill complaining, right? After all, are movies that big of a deal? Except that has been implemented in every single part of our society, from the movies to the air traffic controllers, you see. And it has been done in large part by the Democrat Party. And it's important to know they're not sorry. They haven't changed their ways. Do you remember all this stuff during the Biden years?
Diversity, equality, inclusion, are literally, and that's not kidding, the core strengths of America. That's why I'm proud to have the most diverse administration in history. It taps into the full talents of our country. And starts at the top with the vice president.
Our diversity is our strength, and our unity is our power as a nation.
Hi, I'm Major Rachel Jones, and what Pride means to me is celebrating that diversity is our strength as a nation and as an Army.
Why is diversity important to the Air Force?
Diversity is important to the Air Force
because the world is diverse.
Because without it, we're limited.
It's what makes the Air Force stronger.
We currently have nearly 40% women enrolled at the Coast Guard Academy. I'm really excited about the talent and the diversity that I see coming through the Academy. My daughter is in the Coast Guard as a lieutenant, and there is just nothing but opportunity for her and all of the men and women that have joined the service. I'm really excited about the future as we look ahead.
The budget will advance our efforts to modernize the State Department, including by expanding our training float, updating our technology, carrying out diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility initiatives, including to make our overseas missions more accessible.
DEI is in deity. Diversity, equity, and inclusion is God.
That's what they did. But this is the most important part. You heard the lady at the end, and I hope you listened to her. It is God. This is for these people a religion. And right now, you may be saying, well, at least they're out of power. Trump is smashing it, all these things. But that's not typically how religions are tamped out. These people may be quieter. They may be moving around titles, this and that, as the public became aware of these things. But at their core, this is a foundational principle that America is evil, white men, certainly white male Christians are evil, and they should be snuffed out of society everywhere they can find them. These people are not sorry. They have not given it up because it is their religion. They may be a little quieter right now, but, well, don't take it from me. Take it from Kansas State.
I've learned that the philosophy here is, like, while they are saying that they're going to take it away, or, like, changing the name of things, they're still doing it.
Okay. That was really just what I wanted to make.
Not quite as bad as some other schools, but, yeah, we're definitely, yeah. And our, I mean, education, like, that's, you can't take it out.
No.
If you took it out, that's, like, not quality teaching.
You can't take it out. Because it's a foundational principle for them. It is woven into them. Now, that lady got caught on hidden camera. Thankful that we still have communists who are dumb enough where they don't try to hide it. Here's the mayor of Chicago, Illinois.
And what I have done is I'm working with our HR, because that's where hiring rests, as we work to recruit more and more people to become firefighters, and particularly young Black folks. To your specific question, I've made a commitment to the entire department that I would continue to use my platform to encourage more Black young people to go into this profession, and also ensuring that our HR department has fair practices that allow for more of Black applicants to be in the rotation for strong consideration. It is something that I have my eyes on.
Why do we need more Black firefighters? Why is that important? Well, because I want them. I don't care about your wants. Firefighting is an important job. Why do we need more Black ones? Why is that? Why should that ever even be considered? Well, it shouldn't. And if you try to force it, which they're very clearly doing, you're going to destroy it. Slowly but surely, you'll rot it out, you'll destroy it, people will die. Remember who the new FDNY commissioner is in New York City?
Lillian Bonsignor is a career first responder. In just 9 days, she'll be running the world's busiest fire department, one of the most important appointments of the incoming administration. Although she never served as a firefighter, she's confident that won't matter.
I know the job. I know what the firefighters need, and I can translate that to this administration who's willing to listen. I know what EMS needs. I have been EMS for 30 plus years.
Bonsignor is a trailblazer for the LGBTQ community, who will serve as the FDNY's first openly gay commissioner. She's a highly respected, detail-oriented manager whose style has been compared to NYPD Commissioner Jessica Tisch, who will remain in her post post in the new administration.
Highly respected. Detail-oriented. Never been a firefighter. But she's a lesbian. And that's what's important. Will people die? Oh, I'm sure. But it's not important when you're serving your religion. And they're not sorry, as I said. They're not ashamed. Sometimes they know, though, they do have to lie. They have to hide what they're doing. I want you to listen very closely to this author, a queer author, as her title goes. I want you to listen and just know that these people are not sorry and they're still after your children.
I'm so glad this author spoke about this because as authors of queer books for kids and teens, it's unfortunately something we have to think about a lot. When Penguin asked me what I wanted for my cover, I said I wanted it to be gay enough for queer kids and teens to clock it, but for homophobic parents to just think it's a friendship story. So I said, no holding hands, make my character look gay. And it was actually my cover artist's idea to have one of them looking at the other and this awesome flowers growing between them, like their crush that's forming. So what do you think? Would you guess this was a queer book?
Deceivers out for your children, trying to break them. And again, not sorry. They haven't changed their ways because it's a foundational principle for them. It's woven into them. They can only be defeated. You want to know why your pens suck now? Why the movies suck now? Because these people have wormed their way into every part of our society, destroying everything. Diversity is death. Ignore it. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an incredible show for you. In fact, speaking of death, we'll talk about illegals in a moment. Before we talk about illegals, I want to talk to you about getting a good night's sleep every single night. Sleep can be hard to come by. In fact, I had a long couple days myself. That's why I was gone yesterday. It's a long story. I won't go into it. But tell you what, last night, 7:30, 8 o'clock, I know it was early. I was fading. But I needed a guarantee. I needed to know that I was going to knock out for a long time. So I went and had a cup of hot chocolate. Special hot chocolate, though. Dream powder from Beam. Chocolate cinnamon. Sat there and sipped on a cup of hot cocoa. And then drifted off to sleep like a little baby. Slept like a rock and woke up ready to rock and roll. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Well, it seems like we've been talking about the SAVE Act for a long time. Every day you wake up, there's a new headline, SAVE Act, we're going to pass it, we're not going to pass it, the filibuster, we don't have the votes. Let's just skip all past that and ask an actual United States Senator, one of the very few good ones we have, Senator Eric Schmidt from the great state of Missouri. Senator, okay, just give it to us right between the eyes. The SAVE Act, where is it? Is it dead? What's happening?
No. The rumors of its death have been greatly exaggerated. Good to be with you again, by the way. I'm a fan of yours. You know that. Today, we're going to the bill. So the House sent over the underlying bill that had citizenship requirement to vote and photo ID, which are widely popular and common sense. So that came over to the Senate. So we are going, which takes a simple majority, to go to that bill. So it'll be on the floor. And then at that point, it's sort of game on. And I think we should spend a ton of time on it. I mean, this idea of a talking filibuster, making the Democrats own killing these really popular provisions, if that's what they're going to do, or we can, you know, wear them out and pass it. That's where we'll be over the next, you know, several days. And so I have an amendment that would also include the president's priorities of, you know, getting rid of these mass mail-in balloting scams, ending transgender surgeries for minors, and then also stopping men and women's sports. Those are the five things he's outlined. And I think we ought to get the Democrats to try to defend their positions on that. They're widely popular with the American people. So as of later today, we should be on the bill.
And you think, or you know, I shouldn't say you think, because you know, we can get this done with a simple majority. It's clear we're not going to get 60 votes on any of those common sense things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the idea of the talking filibuster is this, which by the way, happens in state legislatures. The idea is that you come in, if you don't have 60, that's end of it. It's kind of kabuki theater. What you would do is you would make the Democrats exhaust all the time for days and weeks And ultimately, they sort of wear out. This happened during the civil rights debates of the 1960s. This was implemented. So you don't need a rule change to do it. It just takes some political will. So for us, on our side, it would mean that any time the Democrats would say, hey, is there a quorum? They note the absence of a quorum. 51 Republicans have to be there and say, I'm here, for the thing to keep going. Now, if we ever have less than 51 people saying, I'm here, then ultimately it fails. And so it's kind of a test of political will, competing political wills. That's how it would play out.
All right, let's get to that political will on our side. And I'm actually not going to ask you to name names because I know you're probably out there trying to make this thing happen, so I don't need you to stack up more enemies on my behalf. We obviously have some senators who are Republicans that may be hesitant to vote for such a measure. Are we going to be able to get them on board?
I hope so. I mean, you never know until people actually have to cast the vote. I just don't know how. You know, those five issues, right? I don't know how any Republican wouldn't support them. I really don't. So you'd have to ask them. I think that not only are they popular among Republican voters, Democrats actually support making sure you're an American citizen to vote in American elections, making sure you have to show a photo ID when you vote. Democrats writ large, being a radical cult, sort of is totally fine with mutilating kids and transgender surgeries, but most of them don't. And again, I think that's why this is important for us to move forward on. I think politics in many ways is about, you know, the things you can agree on, but it's also making the public aware of the big differences that separate the two parties. And I think this is a big opportunity to do that.
All right, let's get to why there's these freaking lines at the airport. You can't fly anywhere right now in the country.
Oh, man.
It's a nightmare. People are upset about it, understandably upset. Could you explain to everybody watching why there's a three-hour line at Austin's airport?
It's crazy. So basically, we passed 11 out of the 12 appropriations bills, meaning you fund the operations of government. The Democrats have held up the Department of Homeland Security funding, which, by the way, isn't just ICE. It's TSA, as you mentioned. It's Secret Service. It's the Coast Guard. They're holding all of that up because they want to kneecap ICE. They care more about defunding ICE than they do about funding Homeland Security. You think about all the threats. Think of what we saw in Austin, what we saw at Old Dominion, what we saw in Michigan. We're at heightened levels right now, and the Democrats are withholding money for an agency that's charged with protecting the homeland. And so, and that includes TSA. So the traveling public, it does a disservice to them. These TSA agents are now gone without a second paycheck, right? It's ridiculous. So they're trying to prove a political point, Jesse, to their base that moved on from defunding the police to defunding ICE, but it's the same DNA. They hate law enforcement. They don't believe we should have borders. And they certainly don't think people who are here, even illegally, should have to go home. And that's why they hate ICE so much, because it's actually enforcing our immigration laws that they despise.
All right. Beyond the fact that Democrats are America-hating communist savages, do they actually have tangible requests in order to get this thing funded? Or is it all just the standard commie gobbledygook, illegals built the country, and that kind of crap?
Well, I don't know how. I think ultimately they just want to starve ICE. But what most people, I try to tell them, we already front-loaded the money for ICE in the One Big Beautiful Bill. We front-loaded, tens of billions of dollars for deportations. Nothing that they're doing right now is prohibiting ICE from doing their jobs, because we anticipated at some point they would throw a hissy fit about building the wall in detention centers and ICE agents. Put that in perspective, ICE opened up applications for like 20,000 new jobs. They got 200,000 applications. The American people, like normal people, actually care about this stuff, but the Democrats are opposed to all of that. But you know, they've requested things like judicial warrants. By the way, warrants are currently required for ICE to do their jobs and to deport people, but they want a heightened level so that ICE can't do it. They also want to take the masks off these ICE agents so they can be further doxxed and harass their families and be threatened so that nobody wants to be an ICE agent. So, you know, their offers are transparent about what they are. They don't want to enforce our immigration laws, and they don't want anybody to sign up to go do the job.
Tell me about the SCAM Act.
Yeah. So I think this is really important. It's about expanding the categories of people who can be denaturalized and sent home. Right now, it's actually very difficult for someone to be denaturalized. And so we've secured the border. That's one piece. The deportations should continue of the 15 million people who are here illegally. But the second piece of it is, and I filed it originally in the wake of the Minneapolis fraud, when the Somali enclave in Minneapolis was fleecing the system. A lot of these were recently naturalized U.S. citizens whose allegiance was to Somalia and also defrauding the American people. We ought to have a process to do that. So it expands the category. If you've committed that kind of fraud, if you engage in terrorist activities, if you engage in violent crime, we are going to then say, oh, you became a citizen 5 years ago? Well, we're going to denaturalize you now because you violated that oath you promised to the United States of America. So I think this is gaining a lot of steam in the wake of these recent attacks. It was originally filed for the fraud. But we have a broken legal immigration system, Jesse. A lot of people talk about illegal immigration, but our legal immigration system is broken. Our H-1B program displaces American workers. The OPT program displaces American students. If we're really America first, we got to be looking out for Americans first instead of finding all these ways to displace Americans with foreign labor.
Gosh, amen. All right, Senator, I'm assuming you're going to watch America play Venezuela tonight in the World Baseball Classic.
Amen.
I'm assuming that's a thing, right?
All
right.
That will be, yes.
All right.
Yeah, and by the way, let me go off the reservation a little bit here. The idea that American players are playing like for Italy, I mean, it's kind of a joke.
Yes!
You know, I guess they do. I know they do it for competitive balance. But we ought to have a list of the top 50 MLB players that are American. They should never, ever play for a foreign country. That's just my hot take of the day. So, but having said that, I think USA wins tonight. So,
amen. Plus, who wants to be Italian? Anyway, Senator, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. You know what I put in my spaghetti? Male Vitality Stack from Chonk. I'm just kidding. That was a lie. I actually don't put it in my spaghetti. I take my Male Vitality Stack from Chalk with breakfast every single morning. What is it? Well, it's natural herbal supplements. You know, I don't do pills and medications. Not my thing. I don't like it. But what I do very much do is natural herbal supplements. I discovered Chalk about 4 years ago. I was never really a big supplement guy. And then Chalk, they're such hardcore anti-communists. They reached out, said you should try it. Okay. Man, what a difference in my life, in my energy level, in my focus. Just what a difference in my life. Try a male vitality stack or a female vitality stack from Chalk. You are going to be blown away at the difference in how you feel. Gosh, your mood, everything. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
The intelligence community's consensus is that Russia continues to try to influence our elections, primarily through what we would call malign foreign influence. But we certainly have seen very active efforts by the Russians to influence our election in 2020 through what I would call more the malign foreign influence side of things. Social media, use of proxies, state media, online journals, et cetera, an effort to both sow divisiveness and discord, and I think the intelligence community has assessed this publicly, to primarily to denigrate Vice President Biden.
That sounds really bad. A foreign country trying to interfere in our elections. I wonder if John Solomon has any update on that. Joining me now, founder of Just the News. We love him. He's always bringing us the juicy stories. John Solomon. John, was it those dirty Ruskies trying to interfere in our 2020 election?
Well, if they interfered, China clearly interfered. What Chris Wray didn't tell you during that testimony is his agency knew, the Homeland Security Department knew, the CIA knew, the NSA knew, the Office of Director of National Intelligence all knew in the spring of 2020 that China had hacked into some of our voter registration databases. Multiple states, they had obtained a voter data registration, and we're planning to use it to measure public sentiment. In the summer, as you'll see in my story tomorrow, that's the story I broke today, the document that confirms that was declassified, ironically, by the Biden administration, not by the Trump administration. It's a 2020 document that was kept secret until the Biden years, but when you release it, you realize that China obtained large numbers of voter registration data of Americans. Why is that significant? Well, one, once a foreign power has such data, they can do two things. They can do exactly what Chris Ray was describing there, and that is to do malign influence operations on social media, or they could also start to file paper ballot requests and file votes in the names of other people. It's a very real fear. And it was a real fear because the other thing that Chris Ray didn't mention, all right, so he mentioned the Russians, but they had just as good an evidence of what China was doing. What he didn't also mention was that his own bureau had received evidence in the summer of 2020. So in the spring, they learned that the voter registration data has been compromised by China. In the summer, they learned that China had sent some driver's licenses to the United States in a scheme, according to the FBI's own documents, its own informant in China, that was designed to put the requests in for fake ballots and to help Joe Biden win the 2020 election. Chris Ray knew all those things. He decided to tell Congress only about the things involving Russia because Russia, Russia, Russia was the preferred narrative of elitists. We now know that the intelligence community had massive amount of data of China influence and China malign activities in the 2020 election and since then. And ironically, our intelligence communities kept quiet, unlike Britain. When Great Britain found out 2 years ago its voter registration databases had been hacked by China, there was a national scandal, a national crisis. There were recriminations and investigations and firings and an improvement in election security prompted by that. But in America, the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, the DNI all kept quiet about it for the last 6 years.
John, that's the part that honestly concerns me. It's not a shock that the Chi-Coms would be doing dirty things in our elections. I'm worried about our own deep state if we have to use it. Knowing it, and John, I guess I have to ask because you're the one who's gone through the documents. Did they know it and cover it up? Did they know it and keep quiet about it? But how far did the deep state go to make sure I didn't know until today?
They went really far. I'm going to have a new story tomorrow morning. I think you'll enjoy it because it takes the intelligence community ombudsman. It's a person that we don't think of very much. He's a person that's supposed to represent the public's interest in the intelligence community. Alphabet soup. Most people have never heard of the guy. He took a look at this, and you know what he found? He found that the intelligence community wanted to accentuate Russia because that was the preferred narrative. But when they found the same evidence of China meddling, China intrusions, China breaches, they downplayed it because they didn't want Donald Trump to have a narrative against China. If you remember where we were in 2020, we were dealing with the COVID pandemic. Donald Trump thought China was behind it. He turned out to be right. The intelligence community wanted to silence him on that issue, and they were willing to go as far as to keep from the American public and Congress evidence of China's intrusions into our voter databases just to stymie Donald Trump. That's what the Intelligence Committee's ombudsman ultimately found.
Good God. Okay.
That's bad.
I hate to change the subject because this stuff is so bad. It's just what this might mean for the country is so bad. But let's talk about some election integrity stuff because that isn't going away. Trump still talks about it. He's obviously hot on this. He's obviously still looking into it. What's happening in Arizona?
Well, in Arizona, the FBI executed a grand jury subpoena asking the state Senate for its records of the 2020 election. The reason they went to the Senate, not to Maricopa County, which is the big county that the FBI is looking at, is that Maricopa County had already destroyed those records. By the way, nothing nefarious. That's the normal process. The state Senate, which did its own review of the 2020 election, still had the data. So it allowed the FBI to collect data that would normally not be there. What are they looking at? They're looking to see if Maricopa County, the largest voting metropolis in the Arizona. It has the city of Phoenix, and it long been a concern for both Democrats and Republicans that maybe it doesn't run elections very well. They want to know if they in any way didn't follow the state laws that govern how you run an election. Why? Because that becomes a federal crime. If you knowingly and willingly don't follow your rules when it comes to absentee ballots or how you store voter registration or how you store live votes or how you store blank ballots, you can be federally prosecuted under Section 152 of the U.S. Federal Code. It's not been enforced in a long time, but it is a law on the books. It's much like Al Capone getting caught on taxes rather than mob stuff. They're looking at it from that perspective, and they're looking from 2020 to 2024. Now, 2020 was the first data they got, but they're also looking at some observations that two congressional oversight staffers made when they went to Arizona in 2024. Now, this is interesting. Donald Trump's Justice Department and his FBI are looking at Arizona's behavior when Donald Trump won the election in 2024. You know why? Because they're not worried about whether you won or lost. They want to make sure the law was followed. They went to a center called Runbeck. This center had, according to the observers, live ballots stored right along blank ballots. No observers. It was off-site. It wasn't the official Maricopa Center. It was somewhere else, many miles away. The two staffers, one Republican, one Democrat, wrote a report to the House Administration Committee saying this was very alarming. It didn't follow the good rules that you're supposed to have for elections. That's another piece of evidence that the FBI is now following up. If that center didn't comply with the law, if Maricopa County or the Arizona State elections people didn't follow the law, and they did so intentionally, you could see federal charges under the laws that are already on the books.
All right. Tell me about Fannie Willis in the Biden White House.
Fannie Willis is the gift that keeps on giving. First, she gave us an affair with her prosecutor. Then she gave us a case that got thrown out of court. Now she gave us perhaps the greatest proof that we're going to get that the Biden Justice Department and the Biden White House were coordinating with her, a local prosecutor, to try to double the jeopardy, double the cost, double the reputational harm, and double the bandwidth loss that would come with having Donald Trump charged by Jack Smith federally in Georgia at the local level. So she's the Atlanta area prosecutor, a Democrat. She ran on the notion she was going to get Trump, and she did. She did indict him. Now, that case has been thrown out. She's been removed from the case. He's been disgraced in many ways. But what we learned in a three-year effort to get documents from her office, which we ultimately won with the help of the America First Legal Foundation, is that she was coordinating this. She was working with Joe Biden's White House to get a waiver of Donald Trump's executive privilege, something very rare for a state case. Now, in the years past, going all the way back to Nixon, executive privilege is sometimes waived at the federal level. It's very rare for it to be waived at the state level. They got that from Joe Biden's White House. Then they got grant money and other assistance from the Justice Department. In fact, the grant money was a no-bid contract. They basically said, sole source, you could just have it, apply for it, it's your money, which is exactly the concern that Republicans in Congress have had, that the Justice Department not only coordinated with local prosecutors to create a double jeopardy prosecution of Trump and his followers, but used taxpayer money to underwrite it. It now looks from the documents we got from Fannie Willis that that is something that was going on.
John, I can talk to you all day, my friend, but you have to go do actual journalism while I screw off. I appreciate you, brother. These people have to go to prison, man. Also, I heard Cuba is beautiful. I've never been. Maybe I'm going to go soon, though, because I think maybe we're about to own it. I woke up yesterday. I was talking to Ob. We were sitting in the kitchen, and I said, the whole island's without power, like all of it. Find out what's happening there. Francis Martel joins us in a moment. You know what? I bet you their Pure Talk phones still work. I mean, I can't confirm that. I don't want to say it because I'm not there, but the coverage with my Pure Talk phone is amazing. And people think when they switch to Pure Talk, well, I want to support a company that's patriotic, so I'll switch to Pure Talk. I want to support a company that hires Americans, so I'll switch to Pure Talk. But my cell service will probably go downhill. I'll drop calls. They're on the same towers. I'm not asking you to sacrifice a thing. In fact, you want to keep your phone, you want to keep your number, keep your phone, keep your number. Pure Talk makes it easy. And I love that because don't we all want life to be easier? PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
You know, all my life I've been hearing about the United States and Cuba. When will the United States do it? I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good. That's a big honor.
Taking Cuba.
Taking Cuba in some form, yeah. Taking Cuba. I mean, whether I free it, take it, I think I could do anything I want with it. You want to know the truth? They're a very weakened nation right now. They were for a long time. Very violent leaders.
What does that mean? I mean, I heard the place is beautiful, but I don't know. Joining me now, Francis Martel, Breitbart's international news editor. We need Francis's wisdom here. Okay, Francis, what's going on? Let's start here. What's going on in Cuba right now? Because I woke up yesterday, I'm sitting having breakfast with my wife, and I see they don't even have any power. What's happening?
So, Cuba has been in a state of constant protest essentially since 2021. That was the last big wave of Cuba news we had in the United States. They had this massive protest. 200,000 people in every major city went to the streets. And then it just sort of died down in mainstream media coverage. But Cubans have been protesting like this constantly since then. So that's 5 years of constant protests. The protests escalated in the past 3 months because we arrested Nicolas Maduro, the dictator of Venezuela. Maduro was offering Cuba free oil and a lot of financial support. And Mexico, which also has a leftist president, was supplying oil. And they stopped supplying oil essentially because Trump told them to stop. So without the Venezuelan oil, without the Mexican oil, and now obviously Iran has been compromised as well, the biggest sources of oil for, you know, the international bad guys, Cuba has run out of power. Its power grid has been collapsing for decades. And it has gotten to a point where now there simply is no electricity on a regular basis in the country, especially at night. So what happens at night is, without access to electricity, the regime doesn't have surveillance footage, security cameras, all of the technology that a country like China uses to repress people has disappeared. And so now, for the past 11 nights, we've seen massive protests in Cuba, to the point where in Ciego de Avila, they burned down the local Communist Party headquarters. That's how big they are. And the regime can do very little about it.
Okay, Francis, can you walk me through? I know Trump kind of comes down on all sides of everything. It's just the way he is. But it almost sounds like, through some of his statements, that we're working with the regime or something in some way, as if they're just going to hand it over like it's a Christmas present or something. Can you help me understand this? Because I don't understand it.
Yes, I think that type of talk from Trump, that we're talking to the people over there, that we're having negotiations, it comes from a concern that we don't want to do another Libya, right? When Muammar Gaddafi was essentially lynched in the street, there was a massive power vacuum, and now we have the return of the slave trade to Libya. We don't want that. We don't want these power vacuums. So what we're doing is what we did in Venezuela, where we're trying to identify people that are adjacent to the Castro regime that are willing to betray the actual power brokers in the country there in order to have a little bit of power and maybe a little bit of money, but also facilitate some sort of transition to democracy. And that's what's happening in Venezuela, where we see Delcy Rodriguez, who was Maduro's most loyal soldier until she wasn't. And now she is, you know, meeting with Doug Burgum, talking about shipping oil to the United States. I think that's what Trump wants in Cuba. And ultimately, those people will be removed also. And then you will have, you know, a long-term transition to a free state.
Okay. All right. Do we have any idea? Do we have names, Francis, is what I want to know. Is there a guy? Is there a girl? Is there someone we've identified as, okay, probably not warm and fuzzy, they're part of the Castro regime, but somebody maybe we can work with?
Yes. So no one in Cuba that has power isn't a Castro. And that includes Miguel Díaz-Canel, who's the quote-unquote president. He doesn't have any real power. The Castro family has the power. So there's been multiple reports, you know, they're anonymous reports. The White House isn't giving us anything concrete, that our Secretary of State has been talking to Alejandro Castro Espín, who is the son of Raúl Castro, who's the dictator of the country. They call him el cangrejo, the crab, I guess because he's prickly and he's dangerous. That's that's the guy that we've been allegedly talking to. And then this week, the person that came out and said that the Castro regime is now allowing Cuban exiles to invest in the country, that is Raul Castro's great nephew. So the grandson of his sister. So there's multiple Castros there that are allegedly talking to the regime. And then there's this really funny third plot here where Sandro Castro, who's Fidel Castro's grandson, he's an Instagram influencer and he's highly unserious and has been completely left out of this. So he has been posting videos on Instagram saying that he's actually the one talking to Trump. So he's trying to elbow into this because he wants his money, but he's the least serious Castro. He's like the failed son of the family. And he's complicating things too.
Well, good old Instagram, foreign policy by Instagram. Okay, Francis, can you help me understand what you think the future goal might be? Let's just say any one of these people, we get them, we're going to transition the government. We're not going to take Cuba, right? It would be more of, you know, kind of a Puerto Rico situation. What say you?
Well, I mean, are you talking in the next 10 years or the next 100 years? I mean, I think within the next 100, 200 years, annexation is totally on, you know, on the table. But but that's a centuries-long process. What you have now in Cuba is essentially what you have in Haiti minus the gangs. You have a completely failed state, no infrastructure, a population with basically no education because the school system is all communist propaganda. It's going to take centuries to rebuild what was there in 1958. So I think right now the goal is just get China out of there, get Russia out of there, get Iran out of there. All of the really heavyweight villains, enemies of the United States that have been exploiting Cuba for centuries, we got to get them out of there. And I think it's in America's interest to have a government there that is not tied to enemies, but that doesn't mean that we have to be there and build democracy for centuries. I don't think that's what Trump wants. I think he just wants to dismantle the apparatus that facilitates China and Russia and Iran being 90 miles away from our shores, being on an island where we have a really important military base.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Francis, thank you for some education. I certainly needed it. Come back soon. All right. It's St. Patrick's Day. I'm already laughing. You know what we do every St. Patrick's Day. Maybe this is your first year watching I'm Right. So if it is your first year, you're in for a treat. If it's not, if you've been watching for some time, you know exactly what's about to come and lighten the mood. Sit back and enjoy. We'll be back. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And if you've been watching I'm Right for any length of time, you know that this is a bit of an annual tradition on this show. It is St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patty's Day, by the way. And in honor of St. Patrick's Day, we have to bring you once again the greatest St. Patrick's Day news report of all time.
Well, just in time for St. Patrick's Day, crowds are coming by the dozens to get an up-close view at what some say is a piece of Irish folklore.
Some people in the Crichton area of Mobile say a leprechaun has taken up residence in their neighborhood. A leprechaun. NBC 15's Brian Johnson has more.
Curiosity leads to large crowds in Mobile's Crichton community. Many of you bring binoculars, camcorders, even camera phones to take pictures.
To me, it looked like a leprechaun to me. All I gotta do is look up in the tree. Who else seen the leprechaun? Say yeah!
Yeah! Eyewitnesses say the leprechaun only comes out at night. If you shine a light in its direction, it suddenly disappears. This amateur sketch resembles what many of you say the leprechaun looks like. Others find it hard to believe and have come up with their own theories and explanations for the image.
My theory is it's casting a shadow from the other limb.
Could be a crackhead that got hold to the wrong stuff and it told him to get up in a tree and play a leprechaun.
We're going to get down to the bottom of this. You're still on there, guy. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, man.
This guy helping to direct traffic says he's prepared for his encounter with the leprechaun. He's suited up from head to toe.
This wards off spells right here. This is a special leprechaun flute, which has been passed down from thousands of years ago from my great-great-grandfather, who was Irish. I just came to help out.
others just came to get lucky in hopes a pot of gold may be buried under this tree.
I'm gonna run a backhoe and uproot that tree. I want to know where the gold is. I want the gold. Give me the gold. I want the gold.
This is Brian Johnson, NBC 15 News.
My great-great-great-grandfather, who was Irish thousands of years ago. So good. Happy St. Paddy's Day. I'll see you tomorrow.